Hello and welcome to a Mondays on Tuesday on Monday. Wow, it's on the right day. I have a crazy podcast to record today. I had so many concepts this week leading that I want to talk about, and I finally settled on one that I think I chose it because I think it's the most productive, is what I'll say. And it's the small pigeon story, which is something I've mentioned before on other podcasts. So the small pigeon story is basically the idea that a human throws a piece of bread down, and the big pigeon knocks all the other pigeons off and gets this big piece of bread, right? Oh, I got the bread. And the small pigeons that don't really do well are the ones that try and compete with that big pigeon. They're so small, they get knocked off, and they get smaller and smaller and smaller as they have less and less to eat. And the successful small pigeon is the one that doesn't even try this. It finds the crumbs that have bounced far away, and it eats that crumb. It knows it is faster than the larger pigeon. It is smarter than the larger pigeon. And slowly, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it one day can compete with the larger pigeon for the larger pieces of bread. And this goes back to a lot of what I call Roman capitalism, where it's all about territory. It's all about takeover. It's kind of like the takeover your neighbors versus, you know, and then once you've taken over your neighbors, you bring the gifts of that neighbor to sort of bribe the next neighbor. It's like, we have cool stuff. We're going to take you over, but we have cool stuff. And I think there's a whole lot about how money can work in absence of sort of a sole focus on territory. And so one of the things that I'm definitely going to talk about is the idea of where economy of scale has taken the economy and where it's taken this society and why there's a whole lot more to business than the economy of scale. It's a whole lot more to business than lower prices. There's a whole lot more to business than optimizing an existing something that already exists and you're trying to maintain consistency while cutting price. It's just that's really only, you know, a very sort of narrow aspect of what business is. And I talk about how that, as the dominant philosophy of business, has taken us to a place of excessive consolidation, and also where the opportunities are for up-and-coming businesses. And then I make a case for, you know, why we should have up-and-coming businesses, which is kind of funny that I have to make a case for that. But I'm really interested in some of the concepts in there. So the update from Compare Basic is that I got that templater to function across a variety of navigation types. And it sounds like such a basic thing. We've had really cool navigation types and websites for a very long time. But there's something really, really magical about how this templater works. And it comes in tandem with the idea that I have finally figured out with this ecosystem what I am so interested in. The original statement of Seneca was the anti-syntax runtime, the idea that you could run any language on this runtime. And then it became the glass bottom boat of programming because it's built of so many simplistic components that you can audit how it works and what it does very well. But I have a new one because, you know, changing target, still figuring out the targeting. I'm calling it a spatial-oriented programming language. And what that means is that you consider the concepts as if you're mapping out a space, stacks and queues and patterns. And probably the easiest way to think about this is it's almost like high-level assembly. It's like you have assembly that's very close to how a computer works. And then you have sort of a lot of languages at the time were doing, you know, function call, you know, arguments to consolidated returns. And the C language took that and then a whole bunch of other stuff. I mean, C has so many sort of varieties of uses. And the idea is that I believe that consolidation idea, that the idea that computers are fundamentally reductive was a bit of a mistake. And I'm starting to unlock all kinds of potential power by escaping that and having the idea of computing itself is that it's a pattern of pattern that has a sort of existing runtime, and I finally have a consistent communication method. So I'm super, super excited about going out to the next round of crowdfunding with that. I will say this. I am very inspired this morning. I'm actually very hopeful this morning, which is an odd thing to say because in many ways, things are falling out of the sky. In my life in general, I'm recording this from the Midwest of America, and if you check the data on this, you can get a pretty good idea of what I mean when I say things are falling out of the sky. And the reason that, so I'll talk about the problem first. So there's been a lot of terms thrown on, like enshittification, popularized by people like Cory Doctorow and Ed Zitron. Not super familiar with Cory Doctorow's work, but I hear good things from everyone everywhere. I listen to Ed Zitron's podcast quite a bit, and I just love his clear review of accounting, especially not having a like formal accounting background. And he talks a lot about the sort of artificial not so intelligence data sitter funnies and large language model funnies. And I think for me, the problem that I'm focusing on is a little closer to home for quite possibly more people than the sort of AI LLM or even technology sort of product quality loss is what I would say, because from my perspective, the internet has actually gotten worse in the last 10 years. There's more pop-ups everywhere. Menus take a very long time to load, which makes me kind of wonder how they're wiring up the JavaScript for these menus. Sometimes they even wait for like all of the images to load. If I'm on a major retailer, like big US retailer like Best Buy, Walmart, Target, Home Depot. A lot of times, if you're on anything other than a super fast internet connection, the site completely falls apart. You see like weird, funny loading graphics everywhere. And what's amazing to me is that, when I started my career in like 2008, 2009, we spent so much time on the efficiency of applications, how you could load things faster, make them usable faster. And it seems like that's just been thrown out the window. And now, if you're on a site that has a lot of content, it's just like, it's a mess, and it's sad to see that degradation. And the main thing underneath all of this, though, is that the complaints I hear from absolutely everyone about business culture, what American work is like today, even if you were making a living wage, the communication process is a mess. I mean, you have very unrealistic expectations and part, so I know a lot of people who work in retail, in restaurants, or in coffee shops, and the demands that sort of chain restaurants or chain stores are putting on their staff in the face of unrealisticness is so insane. It's like you have, competing with Amazon delivering in 2 days. People now want to have like in-store pickup, and so you have staff being asked to run around the store grabbing things off the shelves for people under extremely unrealistic timelines. And sometimes this is at hardware stores where like you have to gather a bunch of heavy bags of concrete within 1 hour or else, right? Like it's or else. So sometimes you have to refurbish electronic products and have a success rate of a working product that was previously broken. That's completely unrealistic. I mean, half of them are not going to ever work again. And they're trying to hit like a 70 or 80% resale number. And the pressure of these expectations just like pushes down onto the staff in such a crazy way. And there's another thing that's happening, which is I call this process schedule ping pong. And schedule ping pong is where a company decides to optimize their staffing levels for the sort of people they expect to be walking the door at any given time. So if it's a certain weekend of the year that has generally more foot traffic, they'll have more people in the store. If it's a lighter day, they'll have less. If it's a restaurant, they'll have more people for the evening rush than other times. And it gets a little stranger because if you're on a different station, like for example, if you're on the flat top griddle where you'd be like, frying burgers or preparing the contents of sandwiches or possibly, frying eggs or whatever, your setup time is minimal compared to the fry station where you may need to prepare, more breaded flour mixture for some of the deep fried dishes. You may need to restock things. And so your start time may be 4 p.m., 4:15, 4:30. And if you're in a retail store, your start time might be 9 a.m., 10 a.m., 11 a.m. And so what basically happens is never knowing when you're showing up or when you're leaving at any given time causes so much chaos at home when people are preparing to, get your lunch packed to get out the day. When do you wake up in the morning? When do you go to bed at night? And this sounds somewhat like, a minor grievance, but when it comes to having a consistent schedule and having a life that makes absolutely any sense, it's actually a real problem. And the other problem is that these schedules are published only 2 weeks in advance. And it flips all over the place. So like I had a shift at one point where I would show up at 10 a.m. I would work until about 3. I would be off from 3 to 4, and then I would be working from 4 to 11 p.m. And then at times I was booked the next morning at 10 a.m. So it's like you show up, you work two shifts in a row, 2 6-hour shifts in a row, which if you're on your feet at the dishwashing station is pretty intense. And then you get to go home and get a little bit of sleep, and you got to be there again at first thing in the morning, and then you have like 2 days off. And so the real issue here, though, is not just a convenience issue. It's because scheduling has been done for efficiency, and you can only do this with computers. If you had to write this down and hand it to people, the management staff would just be like, I am not organizing that amount of information. We're going to get a whiteboard and we're going to have consistent days. But because computer scheduling has allowed all these weird efficiency numbers to just kind of dump chaos on the staff, technically, when you have a part-time job, or you have, and which employers may give you because they have to pay less benefits, that part-time job is only obligated to give you, whatever hours the employer wants to, and they can schedule them at any of their opening hours on 2 weeks' notice. So, how are you going to get a second job if you need more money? Because you don't have dedicated days, you can't go to another employer and promise like, oh, hey, I can do Wednesdays and Thursdays. Well, you don't know, for a restaurant that's open from like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and then you've got like an hour of closing afterwards and maybe an hour of opening before that, 7 days a week, you're kind of just like part-time, still broke, and on call for whenever they need you. And that kind of schedule ping pong is actually causing a huge amount of problems in people's personal lives. And it keeps them, in the underemployed category. And a part of this is what I'm going to talk about here, which is the economy of scale concept, which is economies of scale have done two things. Number one, it stamped out innovation with an extreme focus on optimizing what already exists, right? No reason to change the product. We can just make it cheaper. The other problem it's created is an exceptionally large amount of consolidation from restaurants who receive the same core ingredient deliveries from a company like Sysco, not like the router with a C. It's Sysco, I guess. They deliver to every restaurant that I worked at. And the concept of economy of scale is very simple, very seductive, and actually, in my opinion, very misleading. It's if you're going to do something once and as a sum total, it doesn't take you that amount of time plus to do twice, right? So let's say if it takes 10 minutes to do something once and 18 minutes to do it twice. Ooh, if we do two, we're saving a little bit of time if you apply that. Ooh, and if you do it 10 times, maybe it only takes you, I don't know, 5% less than that, 10% less than that. You scale this up to a massive amount of money, you just start seeing the savings, flip, flip, flip across your eyeballs. And this is such a simple mathematical story to sell that it has sold very, very well. And so what we have now, I was talking to a small business merchant the other day, and they were saying, do you know anyone at a major hardware store that I can get my product into? Because I can only sell it at Lowe's, Menards, and Home Depot, and nobody else really is going to carry this. Well, the reason for that is that the supply chains, particularly in America, have so greatly consolidated into being these big box stores as the only real destination. There isn't a network of small store merchants connecting with small entrepreneurs to distribute things that basically, without the infrastructure of, small players talking to small players, the only avenue you have is a large carrier that can distribute your product nationwide. And so we now have this situation where if you don't like the big distributors, you just are out of the loop. There's absolutely nothing else to do. And that's taken away so much incentive for them to play fair, to innovate on quality, to change absolutely anything. And that's part of this economy of scale idea that lower prices are always better. No, but why would anyone want anything better? You know, we can just sell the same thing for cheaper and then we win. We win. And the other interesting thing is that the mindset of economies of scale, even though it has very obviously arguable financial benefits, it also homogenizes and standardizes the market to an incredible degree, because any niche or nuanced or unique product has no place in this world of economy of scale. Because if you are distributing something nationally, if it only sells in a certain region, it's not worth it. It actually gets left behind. So back to the small pigeon analogy, which is the small pigeon runs far away to get the crumbs that the big pigeon doesn't actually want, right? They're interested in the big piece of bread. So if you're a very, very small business and you want two things, which I do as a small business, and I imagine most small businesses do. Number one, you want an underserved population, an underserved audience, and something that you can do without being challenged by big companies that can overcompete on production quality or price gouge whenever they want. You basically want something in their blind spot. And there's a really interesting concept that I've always thought, which is that if you are a large company, losing 3% of your audience is a massive amount of money. Massive amount of money. And so you cater your delivery, quite literally your distribution, which markets you sell into, and the sort of feel and experience of your products for the masses, not the niche audience. And the reason is it doesn't make sense to serve 3% of your audience if it costs you 5% of your main audience. So there's all this like lowest common denominator, low-hanging fruit approach, not because that's evil, even though it is evil, but it's because they have so much more to lose by serving niche audiences. In the software world, this is the power user audience. This is the unusual sort of visual use case audience. Like if you want pagination rather than infinite scroll, if you want sort of simplicity and less design rather than more, if you're not obsessed with simplicity and you just want all the options at once, these are the kinds of things that there are certain use cases for them that are very, very necessary, but the bulk of users are not going to be in that space. And so these things have all slowly been dying. Everything niche, everything unique, anything sort of avant-garde, it's all been dying simply because the consolidation through economy of scale has made companies prioritize the sort of major popular normalized audience above the niche audience. And if you're a small business and you can deliver something to that niche audience, you have two huge advantages. Advantage number one is that audience is going to be so hungry for something high quality and nuance, they're going to be like, I have not been able to find this. You are the best. I will pay twice as much for it. I've been looking for this. So it's the premium price market that really has been underserved and has the most advantages. It's the high touch, high quality, quite possibly a little bit more complicated avenue that has been underserved. But most importantly, large competitors cannot undercut you on price here because they literally can't enter this market because it risks their popular market. They can't undercut you on quality or delivery because they've been so obsessed with the economy of scale method that they'll never do something high touch, highly crafted, highly customizable. And so I think this is kind of the sweet spot for emerging, innovative, fair and progressive company culture businesses is to actually have a look not at what's possible that's already being done, but what fell apart when people thought that sameness and efficiency were the only things in life that matter. What fell apart? And I've been talking, a lot online. I finally realized that networking locally where I was not really going to connect me with the people who were like me. And by like me, I mean someone who cares about the fundamental basics of life. You know, the complicated, exciting stuff is great when it's there, but I feel like we're kind of losing out on the basics, basic quality, basic food, basic time, you know, high quality interactions with humans. And then also, I am part of the sort of class of, you know, American sort of white collar specialist refugees. You know, I got, it's a combination of three things. Number one, I am excited to start a company. I really am. I've been sort of wanting to do this kind of programming for as long as I could kind of understand how computers worked. I also was laid off in 2022, and then I found a small company for a little bit. But there's a third factor, which is that the culture of modern business is so toxic that I was kind of like, I don't want to go back. Like, the suffering involved in being in a room where the people who call the shots not only don't seem to know what they're doing, but don't seem to care that they don't know what they're doing. It's so painful, especially for someone like me who cares about doing a good job. So those three factors, care about the basics, was laid off, and also find modern business culture incredibly toxic. It means that I'm very interested in starting new things, starting a new way of business. And it comes down to something simple. A business is expected to take a dollar and make it into two. And that's it. That's it. Maybe 1.1, 1.3, 1.5, maybe $1 becomes three. But that's it. There's no other actual like requirement that you have to hire and fire people a certain way, or structure your business a certain way, or get on with your day a certain way. It's just that. And I think given the number of highly, highly experienced and effective professionals that have now been cast aside through the sort of never-ending layoff season, there's definitely enough of us to band together and start something. We have every vertical. It was one thing when the layoffs were only software engineers and you had a bunch of software engineers like, well, I can do the software engineering bit. Well, me too. You can't start a company with only that skill set, but now it's rounded into HR, accounting, writing, sales. It's rounded into every component you would need to start almost any kind of business. Line cooks are having a hard time finding work, retail professionals, mechanics, have people who fix electronics. It's kind of everyone. And part of my going out online to find people, you know, like me who are, you know, have moved back potentially to their hometown where there's like a different, you know, level of work than they're used to because there isn't the consolidation of major cities, or maybe they're just kind of like tired of the working world as I am. I'm finding a lot of them online. We're talking. It's fantastic. I have like a open calendar booking available at the team section of comparebasic.com if you'd like to book time with me. It's been fantastic to connect with people. But also, I went out on the internet, you know, Reddit, LinkedIn, you know, Blue Sky, whatever sort of social media posting place. And I noticed at first that my artificial not so intelligence post about sort of tearing down the sort of myths around AI was getting the most likes. The business layoffs are not about greed, they're just about dysfunction, second most likes. And then once in a while I would say, hey, you know, there's enough of us to start something new. And that was getting ignored for a while. It's like people were are angry, but not quite at the point of rounding the corner of like, oh yeah, let's do something. And that has started shifting. And I'm not sure if it's my phraseology, if I'm getting better and less, you know, cranky and aggressive about saying, hey, you know, there's enough of us to start a new business culture. But it's very nice to see a lot of likes on those kinds of posts. And I think we are entering the age where it's not enough to try and find strategies to get back into a sort of corporate, large, highly consolidated business world with an expectation that they can just kind of do whatever they want. It's not as practical to try and depend on that for a stable income anymore. And I also am looking at the small business community that I have been in, and it seems like there's just a lot of work to do, a lot of understanding of, you know, how do you fund the basic operations of a business? What does it look like to actually deliver a product or a service, not just, you know, spend a ton of marketing dollars on something that's mediocre? And I'm excited to see this trend of people being like, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe we should start things. And so I thought I'd record this podcast about the small pigeon philosophy, because I think that when you take, 100% of a market cap of whatever industry or whatever, and you take that like 3 to 5% that large companies can't and won't touch, there's plenty of room to start all kinds of small producty, servicey somethings. And I really look forward to sort of a resurgence of variety, fairness. I think a lot of us have been in situations where we were like, these company decisions are not even good for the company. It's just really a lot of, political grandizing, ego flattery. Somebody wants to feel like they know more than they do. And the number of layers like that above people who are actually just, trying to do a good job means that those of us who are trying to do a good job can do a good job. And I'm really looking forward to banding together and creating a sort of real economic resurgence of sort of fairly run emergent businesses. As always, if you like the things I talk about, head over to comparebasic.com, have a look. I expect some really exciting Seneca documentation in the next week, and then I don't know. I mean, it's a crazy time. I'm really struggling with the sort of irresponsibility of the money I should be making that I'm not. But man, the components are coming together so quickly. Even though delays are a real thing, but the power I'm seeing is so. You know what? Sky is falling. The world is burning. But I still got my hope, and I'm hoping that this small pigeon philosophy can inspire things. And I'll see you next week.